I'm so excited to be here with Emily Giffen. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for being here.
We're here at the beautiful Cheekwood Botanical Garden in Nashville.
There's so many weddings going on here today, and I can totally see why. It is gorgeous.
Yeah. I just walked the grounds, and I've never been here before.
Did you get some good pics?
I did. Okay, it's such a cool setting.
Good.
What made you decide to set this particular book in Nashville?
You know, one of the things that goes into the consideration, if I'm totally being honest, is what city do I want to spend more time in? You know, if it's not a city I already know really well, such as Atlanta, where I live now, or New York, where I once lived, if it's not a place with which I'm very familiar, then I try to choose a city that I want to spend more time in. And Nashville is one of those places. I just love it here so much. And I was excited about doing more research, you know, which is really just going to visit and eating out and hanging out with friends. But I think it also worked really well within the framework of the book to explore these very, you know, different families from sort of different social classes. I think Nashville has very distinct neighborhoods, but it's not so sprawling as Atlanta is, where I'm from.
Yeah, you can kind of drive just a few minutes. Yeah,
just
a
few
very
minutes,
different
and
area.
Really, and it's you know, it's big enough to be an important American city, but small enough that I really felt that I was able to get familiar with it on a with a few trips.
I actually was driving from East Nashville, which is where I live, over here to the event, and I was like, wow, she really captured the two neighborhoods.
Well,
I could
thank
feel
you.
It.
And I love East Nashville. That was my favorite neighborhood where, of course, Tom and Lila lived, and Bongo Cafe and
yes.
Game Point Cafe, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
The coffee shop. I spent a lot of time in there writing scenes, and what a great place to live.
So going more into the story, mm-hmm. it tells the situation of a student gets an inappropriate photo of her taken at a party, and then how it impacts both of the families involved and both of their perspectives. And I feel like that's such a timely topic for 2018. Did you feel a lot of pressure to get it exactly right in this context that we're sort of living in?
Yes. I mean, you know, there's always a sense of responsibility when you're writing a novel. You want it to be accurate. You want it to be true to life. But I would say that, there's so many different ways to explore that issue. I mean, we've seen it, you know, there's not just one set social media scandal. I mean, there's this endless variations of that. And one of the things that I think is really interesting is intent. You know, was it, you know, an accident, or did it have a mean-spirited, you know, racist or sexist underpinning? And you know, when you're talking about young people, I think that issue is especially, you know, you sort of expect adults to know better, to know what they're saying, and you hold them more accountable. But when you're talking about young people, I think there's a little bit more latitude in the claim that I didn't mean anything by this, which isn't to say that you shouldn't hold teens accountable. And Finch in the book is actually 18, so I guess he's considered an adult, certainly legally. But, I think there's a lot of gray area that I think is so interesting to explore.
Yeah, and you really get a sense of that nuance as you're going through the story without giving anything away. You don't really know exactly who to root for, and it keeps shifting, mm-hmm, and you mm-hmm. see that everyone sort of has a different perspective on the situation, and I don't know that that's really been explored a lot before in fiction.
Yeah, I mean, I've been told a few times since in the last week when people are really starting to read it that it feels like a mystery or a thriller in some ways, which was surprising to me, that characterization, because I'm certainly not known for that genre. I write relationship-driven pieces, but I think it really mirrors the way that I felt in writing it and wondering, you know, he, the boy at the heart of the scandal, is one of the few major characters who isn't given a first-person voice. So we never get inside his head. So we're left to wonder. Hearing from his mother would be the closest that we know to what he's thinking. The one third of the chapters are written from her perspective, but we really don't know for sure. And I found myself, even as the writer, and occasionally wondering, how, I don't want to give anything away either, but exactly what was going through his head and what kind of person is he? And are his actions redeemable? Are they? Can they be forgiven? Can people change? All of those questions are ones that really fascinate me.
And I imagine that with this topic, a lot of readers can relate to some degree on a personal level. Have you gotten any stories from fans at any of the events so far or feedback?
Well, this is only the second. I was in Charlotte last night, so not necessarily from my readers, but definitely, you know, I've heard stories since I started writing the book. I mean, I began the first chapter was written in the summer of 2016. So it was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And
so much has happened.
In the world. This whole Me Too movement, of course, hadn't, you know, the underpinnings of it. We've all been aware of sexism in our society and sexual harassment in the workplace and everything else. But the movement didn't have a name. And that happened as I wrote. So I also found there were several situations, I don't know, scandal might be too strong of a characterization, but in my own community in Buckhead, my neighborhood in Atlanta, after I conceived of this idea and began writing it, and I think to a certain extent it heightened the emotions that I felt in the book, and the book heightened the emotions I felt in you know, hearing details of the real life scenarios.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, one of the things that I love about many of your books is that you do use multiple perspectives. As a writer, do you have any strategies for jumping back and forth between the different character voices?
Well, I love doing that because it sort of gives you three different, you know, it's three different very angles to the story. And it's the first time I've done three, first time I've done a man. I've done a teenager before, so that wasn't new for me, but she was a very different teenager than the one in Where We Belong. In terms of, did you say any advice for that?
Is that your question? Yeah, sort of going through it with today, yes. I'm going to be more in this person's voice.
Right. You know, I got to know them. In the beginning, it's sort of like that. It's like you're thinking, you know, in sort of typecasting.
Flushing them out,
and as you get to know them, they seem more like individuals, and you don't think of them so much as a teenager or as a man. You think of them as Lila and Tom. I did think it was important, as far as the process goes, I do think it was important to spend time talking to teenagers. And I have quite a few teens in my family and friends who are, you know, people who I've talked to anyway, but I made it a point to share those scenes and you know, vet some of that and say, like, did I get this right? This whole vaping thing, did I do it right? And the same with Tom's voice. You know, I felt very confident in my understanding of who he is as a person, but as far as his actual voice goes, there were questions I had, like, would a man say it like this?
Yeah.
And of course, there's not just one male voice out there, so it wasn't just one point of view, but to have a few male readers and say, does this seem right to you? It was helpful to have that input.
Well, you mentioned talking to teens, and that reminded me, I discovered something borrowed back when I was in high school, so about 10 years ago, but I could still relate to all the best friend dynamics of these 30-year-old characters. So what would you say to any teenagers who you're hoping might pick up your books or enjoy reading more in general? I feel like that's so important.
Well, thank you for sharing that you read it as a teen, and that means a lot. I always love hearing that when a reader first read my book, and how it might have resonated with them. I think that we're more alike than we are different when it comes to age, race, gender, everything else. And I think some of these themes that I write about are so universal, and it's why I've been lucky enough to you know, develop a following and loyal readers who stick with my books, you know, from high school to adulthood and different phases of their life. My characters have evolved with me in many ways. I started writing when I was in my 20s, single, you know, childless. Now I have three children. One's right over there. Hi, Harriet. She's 11. I love sharing those connections with readers.
Well, thank you so much. This has been great.
Thank you.
Do you want to remind everyone where they can find you on social media?
Oh, yeah. Come follow me. Instagram's my favorite social media.
Yes.
I feel like it's the least critical and mean-spirited. It's a happier place.
It's fun, yeah.
It's at Emily Giffen, which is no R. A lot of people think they see the R, and it's not Griffin, it's Giffen, but Emily Giffen, author. And I think I think my Facebook is Emily Giffen Fans. Awesome. So I don't like the word fans. I like readers.
Readers.
So it just, it feels more like an accurate depiction of what I consider my relationship with my readers.
Well, I'm excited for a great event today, and best of luck with the rest of the book tour as well.
Well, thank you. I'm really glad you're here. It was nice talking to you.